Hello and welcome. I'm Jacinta Bolsenbrook from the Grower Group Alliance, your host for Making the Call, Farming Decisions in WA podcast. Now, it's a mini-series exploring how Western Australian grain growers are making smarter, more informed nitrogen decisions on farm. This series is brought to you by the Grower Group Alliance and 8 West Australian Grower Group project partners. Each episode, we'll be heading out to a different region to hear from local growers about how they're balancing risk, reward, and investigate how they're making nitrogen efficiency and usage decisions in their farming systems. This podcast is part of the RiskWise National Risk Management Initiative, a $30 million GRDC investment helping growers navigate key decisions around nitrogen management, sowing times, and machinery investment. So, join us as we unpack the thinking behind making those tough calls and the people making them.
Hi, my name's Simon Kruger and I'm the Project Communications Officer at the West Midlands Group. Today I'm chatting with Mark Drake, Lawson Grain's Farm Manager at Wellew Farm in Dandaragan. Thanks for joining me on the podcast, Mark.
Thanks for the invitation, Simon.
My pleasure. So to get started today, can you just tell us a little bit about the operation here at Wellew?
So the operation here, it's owned and managed by Lawson Grains. We are the northwestmost farm in the business, one farm out of 11. There's 5,500 hectares here, based just at Regan's Ford, and we grow canola, wheat, barley, lupins in rotation.
And how long have you been in the role here at Wellew, Mark?
So I took over here in March 2017, so it's my ninth season here.
Ninth season, nice. A bit longer than I have, 4 years deep at the moment. So you've been here for 9 years now. You know, how do you think this season's shaping up in comparison to others?
So this has been the wettest seasons I've been here. So 2016, I think, was a 620 millimetre rainfall. This year we're punching at 660.
Yeah.
Last year, I think, it was 540. And then 2023 was 330 here. So three very different seasons in 3 years. Season looking good, very promising. The quality looks good, yields are good. Forecasting's been above long-term average this year.
Yeah.
So we'll see what it's doing when we actually deliver it to the bin.
Yeah, right. And so, yeah, like you said, you know, we've got a 330 mil year in 2023. We've got a, you know, 670 this season. How does that seasonal variability impact some of your nitrogen decisions?
Well, considerably, I guess we have multiple, we call them levers to pull to manage and applications depending on the season. So back in 2023, we pulled the last in-crop application to reduce, I guess, our exposure to yield loss. 2023 actually turned out to be our record year so far here at Wellew, just the way the season panned out. 2026, we've actually put more N on than planned because of the high leaching pressure here in these sands.
Yeah.
So the applications this year, one more than usual, just to try and target high yield and replace the lost nutrients through that leaching pressure.
And so your experience in 2022 with that kind of that high rainfall year as well, has that influenced the way that you've made your decisions this year, or do you have like a pretty similar kind of baseline no matter how the season's panning out?
So I guess we look at it when we set the crop plan in September, October for the following year, we have the plan in place so we can build a budget. But when we're actually getting to the tail end of the season, mid-season to tail end of the season, we look at projected yield forecast, projected rain forecast to see where the season's going to lead and make an application decision based on what we believe is going to happen. So we think it's going to benefit putting more on, we can put more on. If we think the season's going to finish early, then we'll hold back until a clearer picture is about what's going to happen.
You think it is still a bit of a guess in those kind of scenarios? Like you've got, especially weather-wise, I suppose, might be the way we go.
Yeah, so we look at lots of weather models. The stuff here in Australia, I guess, based on BOM, I guess some people could complain over years, it hasn't been wholly reliable. I have seen forecasts here that either don't eventuate or you get double the rainfall of the forecast, and it's never a drama. I guess the important thing is the finishing weather, so through September, the weather we get then. This year I've had a fairly soft finish. I haven't really had rainfall in September, October for 6 or 7 years. So this finishing this year, probably, I guess, to say, the softest I've had here, and it's looking quite good.
I mean, it rained over the weekend as well, which is, it's pretty unusual. Now, that's when you say soft finished versus like raining at this time of the year as well. Is that changing much for you guys? Is it slowing you down or anything like that?
So this time of year, like we're into the third week of October, everything is past the point where rain is beneficial. So that 10 mil we had on the weekend just gone, hasn't really done much other than slow down chemical application, like crop topping had to stop for 2 days because of the rain.
Yeah.
So that's just slow down operations. The benefit for crop yield is not there this time of year for us. It's just operation stuff.
Yeah, mate, perhaps in other paddocks around the area where things are a little bit, they started a bit later or things are a bit slower, would they still be seeing a benefit from for the rain?
Yeah, so for sure here, so we start seeding canola first week of April.
Yeah.
We use early to mid varieties to try and get us finished, or the canola finishing on that end of September, end of September to finish flowering to promote yield, which we generally do see here. These sands finish early anyway because the loss of moisture through the sand. The crops you're seeing further to the east or north of here, anything that's still green through the stem, this late rainfall would definitely benefited.
Yeah.
As long as it can take moisture up.
Yeah. And now, perfect kind of, not a segue, but you just mentioned the sands and the sandy soil that we have here, which if anyone knows the West Midlands region, probably quite familiar with us talking about our sands and probably WA in general. But how does paddock and soil type variability have an impact on those nitrogen decisions, nutrition decisions year on, year out?
Yeah, so we are classified here as a high rainfall zone. So that's 450 and above in this zone. Doesn't happen every year, but that's on average, I guess.
Mm.
The sands that we have here in this part of the high rainfall zone, mostly just coloured sands over sand, deep sands. A little bit of gravel here and there, but it's about 75%, I would say, bottomless sand. Very little clay content, very little organic material in it, very few loamy sands at all. So high rainfall years put pressure on N particularly with leaching.
Mm.
So we managed the N in those years with having to try and apply either more applications of smaller amounts. Mm. Or if we get caught out with a big rainfall event, we have to go and put more on top up what we believe is leaching at the bottom.
Is that a pretty unique system to, you know, the sandy soils in our area, in the sense that your passes with nitrogen applications are going out, you know, 3, 4, 5 kind of passes in a season?
Yeah, so in canola, we are 5 to 6 passes, sometimes 7 depending on the season and the rainfall events that we have. In cereals, we are 3 to 4, depending on the season. We can break them up into small applications more frequently if we can see a reason to. So like a high rainfall year like this year, we applied a bit more N on both cereals and canola in an extra pass. It made it something with 7 passes in canola, which gets costly, I guess, but we're trying to reduce leaching while still targeting the N application rate for our expected yield.
Mm. I suppose, is there an efficiency kind of question in that as well? Like, would it be helpful or more efficient for you to be able to put out more of a capital application, or to like larger amounts, smaller number of passes, or is it very specifically to do with the soil type and needing to get out there and worrying about leaching, etc.?
I guess if we had a product that slowed down release available in this area, I know there are granules with slow release coatings. I know there's a liquid further north with a high N content with slow release. It certainly helps reduce costs, so depreciation on machine hours, labor costs, fuel costs, running over the area again and again. So certainly if we cut a pass out, that's a fair bit. It would certainly help. It's just, I guess, looking at what's available at the time, utilizing the best products that we can to target what we're trying to achieve.
And so if anyone's listening in from the fertilizer industry, possibly we can look at some slow-release fertilizer, that pie-in-the-sky kind of scenario, if you just put it out and let it sit and then you can go to the beach. Is that that's the win?
They are out there, I guess. It's just the discussion we've had. So we don't use a lot of granules here because of application restrictions, like liquid we can put out when it's windy, which we get a lot of the westerly coastal weather here. When it's wet, It doesn't matter when you put it out. Dry periods, but prills, when you put them out, you have to have rain to wash them in. And then the uptake can be quite slow. With liquids, the uptake is not instant, but it's much faster. And you're relying on having to have a large amount of rain to wash it in.
Does that almost give you a flexibility in a sense that you've got, you can be a bit more nimble with or reactive to when and how you put the nitrogen out when you are going to do it? So the spray gives you that kind of, a liquid gives you that opportunity?
Yeah, certainly we have timing windows for everything. So chemical fertilizer, it's all supposed to be applied within windows of crop growth. So with the liquid fertilizer, if we're out spraying, there's poor weather coming in, we could just hit a button in the cab, switch over, fill with fertilizer and go and put fertilizer out whilst it's poor weather.
So another quick question that I've got, Mark, is what was your strategy, your nitrogen strategy in 2017 when you first got here? What does that look like today in 2025 and leading into 2026 season?
Yeah, so as soil health has improved, as yields improved, as weed burden has dissipated, we got better at what we do. We just changed N strategy a little bit to try and increase, I guess, the start of the plant's life. So back in 2017, we were putting down 15 to 20 litres of Flexi N down the tube at seeding. And that was mainly due to, I guess, at the time, soil health, when the farmers bought, it's taken a lot of work to build it up. I did that for a couple of seasons. Then we moved to 30 litres down the tube as we start to see crop health improve, soil improve, and that's been current up till the 2025 season. So next year, we're targeting 40 litres down the tube. Again, as soil health has improved, the thought is that we can apply more down the tube without the risk of loss. So it's mainly been about losing that early N through leaching in the early stages. So we will apply now 40 litres next year with that first in-crop application around about 60 litres at that 3 to 4 leaf stage, or in canola, that 2 leaf stage, just to try and improve the germination point, how healthy it is when it comes out the ground.
And so is that one of the learnings that you've had, or is it just something you've brought along with yourself the whole time? It does seem that it's kind of targeting one of the issues at a time kind of thing, or is there, you're targeting multiple issues all at the same time? Was it targeting the non-wetting and dealing with that first and then bringing an improved nutrition package once you've dealt with a constraint?
Yeah, so I guess as we've dealt with constraints, like you mentioned, like the pH has been a big one here for roots, particularly in plants. As we've dealt with that, the ability to apply more N and have the plant take it up has improved. So it takes time, right? I feel you can't do more than one thing at a time to understand the result. So if you do multiple things, you don't know where that's been driven from. So whilst we fix the pH or most of the pH issues, we stuck with the N rate as it was, got to a point, thought we'd go more as the pH improves and the soil health improves, add a bit more. Now we're achieving above long-term average yields. We want to try and find somewhere that it gives out a little bit more, and we feel it's at the beginning of crop stage, crop life. So we do generally get crop away really early here through early planting, I guess a bit of luck with rainfall events. It's just about getting the plant away.
Yeah.
So we've seen that the earlier it gets away here, the more benefit we have to yield at the tail end.
Mm. You said before that, you know, you've put out some extra nitrogen this season. Certainly you've put out a couple of strips for us at West Midlands Group, which I'm thankful for. What's your thinking like when you're going out to put out any kind of extra nitrogen, or thinking about doing those extra kind of strips? What are you punching for?
So trial work, we do trial work every year. I guess the feeling is if we don't, we can't see what we could achieve or what can fail. So we put out both granulated fertilizers. We use a bit of NKS here, and liquids at different crop stages. So right from 3 to 4 leaves right through to flag, just to see what the timing effect has on those higher inputs, whether it affects yield, whether it affects quality. I haven't to date seen a massive yield kick from an extra 100 litres of Flexi N. It's just something that doesn't seem to happen here in these sands. Like when the harvest yield maps, nothing really stands out. So the effect of putting that on at any stage that we have to this point hasn't really shown value. We've still got to pin down trials on quality, I guess, in those areas.
Yeah, gotcha.
This year, for the first time, we've applied FlexiN post-head emergence at grain fill to see if it'll increase protein.
Yeah.
So in the sand that we have here, the low-yielding sands generally create higher protein cereals, mm-hmm. and then the higher quality sand, if you can call it that, or the gravel areas or the red loam that we have a fraction of, you get high yield, low protein.
Yeah.
So the tactic has been to apply N at grain fill stage or just prior onto higher yielding, better quality soils to see if we can give that protein a kick. And it isn't necessarily about trying to run from what we normally deliver as APW1 into H2 or H1. It's about trying to ensure that we average out across all the cereals, targeting the APW1 rather than dropping out into, say, AUH or GP, the Ausload here and there.
Does that give you more of a, it's a, not a safety blanket, or of course we could call it a safety blanket, a blanket kind of approach in the sense that it averages things out, or that's the
Yeah, the hope is averaging out the quality. So rather dropping a few loads into AUH or GP through poor grain fill or proteins, try and average it out. I guess what's going to determine where we go from here is the cost of application compared to the grain price at the time. So it'll be probably the grain market and the pricing that decides whether we continue trying to increase protein or whether we've got enough of the sand gravel loamy soil split to blend it without having to try and increase protein on the high yielding soil types.
I know that one of the considerations for you guys here is still utilizing legumes in your system. Certainly lupins are the crop of choice, and you noted before that it's in your system in your rotation. So and I also note that in the area, and I think maybe across, you know, a lot of Western Australia in general, there's been a dip out of legumes in the rotation, and certainly it's been a, you know, kind of a cereal canola scenario for a while. Do you utilize those lupins in your rotation, their system, for their N fixation or carryover potential, or just for another reason?
Lupins are in there predominantly for the fixed N. It appears in these sands that it helps with the leaching pressure in the latest stage of the season. So we try and follow lupins with canola. We do follow lupins with canola. Mm. We did start off following lupins with some cereal, some canola, but all switched to canola probably 5 years ago. I guess the theory there is the fixed end is more valuable to canola and it can convert it better than the cereals can.
Yeah.
So when it comes to the N inputs, anything there that follows lupins, so the canola in A, generally has between 50 and 60 litres of N less in the plan because of the fixed N from the lupins.
And so in that scenario, you do make the decision to drop off the amount of N that the canola gets because of that carryover. I'll just pose a question to you whether or not you've tried or trialed keeping the N amount the same on the canola following the lupins to see if you get a boost in the overall yield or anything like that. So it's not just getting the carryover and then you're able to take it away from the net following crop, but rather if you kept the rate the same. Have you seen anything like that?
Yep. So going back to that trial piece about planned trials or off-the-cuff trials, we do tend to put high-end strips in every crop, whatever they followed. I haven't yet to date seen a increased yield in canola following lupins from applying more N. But we do continue to do it year on year because years are so variable rainfall and the leaching pressure at different times, because of the environmental factors are so different, it's hard without set procedures in a proper trial that, say, Deeper would do or West Midlands Group sampling regularly that we just don't do here to understand what is actually happening. So whilst we keep doing those farm level blanket applications to see if it kicks up any yield data, there's no specific soil testing, plant testing going on to see what's actually happening.
But that, I mean, this, I guess, is that's a strategy in and of itself, is that year on year testing in the same paddocks and doing the same high rates, that builds up a bit of a even more of a profile of the farm as a whole. Does it average out the season? So you do end up seeing something when you compile enough data over a period of time?
So we don't rely on residual N, carryover N, however you want to term it, when the crop plan for the next season comes in. We basically go back to base level, zero, don't count anything being left.
Mm.
If something is there, I'm sure it's a benefit, but in these sands, results have just shown, like soil tests, shown as there's hardly anything left.
Do you soil test the depth in those paddocks as well? What's your kind of strategy in that space?
So we soil test somewhere just short of 100 sites every year, down to 70 centimetres. We have been going deeper the last 2 or 3 years just to see what is down there. We've worked hard to fix the top 50 centimetres, which we've soil tested here from when we bought the farm back in 14 to probably three years ago. And then we're just going deeper and see what's happening. And that's partially because we're now ripping deeper. So roots can get down to that depth. We just need to know what's down there.
Yeah, of course. It's a question of due diligence, I guess, as well. Because, I mean, at the same time, you can't really manage it if you're not measuring down to that depth as well. So you obviously...
Exactly, right? So you need to know what's happening to understand what you're seeing. I'm not a scientist, so we have advisors to look at all this for us. And they come back and give us information. But if you don't know what's happening, how can you make a decision? So information is key. We get a lot of data in everything we do. The soil tests we do every year do help decide on fertilizer strategies for that season. But then, yeah, for the following season, back to base level, where the soil tests haven't been done.
And so, I mean, obviously, we've meandered a bit through possibly what you've learned over your last kind of 8-9 years here now, or 9 seasons. So as almost a bit of a wrap-up in the conversation for today, like what are some of your biggest learnings over time, over the time here at Wellu?
So when I came here to Wellu, I'd never seen sand being farmed like this. Everything from coarse grey sands through to fine white sands, and it was a bit of an eye-opener coming from where I was previously with Lawson Grains down at Mungwinup to here, seeing the non-wetting issues that we have here and we still have here to a large extent, compaction to a slightly lesser extent. I can still see wheel marks from the previous owner, so pre-2014, and we're already ripping down to 750 millimetres. So the compaction is obviously deeper than that.
Deeper than that, yeah.
Yeah. So I guess learning about how to reduce compaction issues. And that really is just deep ripping as deep as we can sensibly go. The amelioration work for trying to reduce the non-wetting has shown that it's not a permanent fix and it is returning. We're starting to see it again now. We start spading 2015, 2025, I can see it's returning.
Yeah, so a 10-year kind of window.
Yeah, and I guess the thought was back when we originally did it, it might have a 10-year life. I have seen issues all the way through that, so I've seen treated seed in the ground still with its colour coding on 2 years after we planted it.
Absolutely, no moisture on it at all.
Nothing. It's got to it because it's still got its full coating on. The seed is still dry, not germinated. Stick it in a wet patch, it grows. So that's the non-wetting. I'd love to permanently get rid of it, but I don't think it's going to be possible. So we've tried chemical intervention with the deep ripping, the spading, the ploughing with the plosive players that we have. I guess the next thing we're looking for is to ameliorate the soil in a way that is more cost effective and maybe has a longer lasting effect. Mm. So importation or organic matter, try and increase what we have here. And I think in this zone, we're at like 0.01, I think it is.
It's pretty low.
Maybe there's 0.1% organic matter in this soil type. So even trying to lift that 0.1-0.2% is difficult, but it will help. So my focus has been soil health, driven by seeing the effects of non-wetting, to trying to reduce that and improving overall health of every hectare to try and grow a better crop, so a healthier crop, a better product, so a higher quality, reduction of chemical inputs, and hopefully eventually reduction on fertilizer inputs to grow the same yield.
Perfect. I think that's a pretty good way to wrap it up then today, Mark. So I just want to thank you for chatting with me and sharing some of your insights. Good luck with harvest, and I hope you see some of the nitrogen decisions we've talked about today pay off and you look at some nice yield numbers.
Thanks, Simon. It's good to have a chat.
Thank you.
Yep, thanks, Simon.
You've just been listening to Making the Call, Farming Decisions in WA. This podcast is part of the RiskWise National Risk Management Initiative, a $30 million GRDC investment helping growers navigate key decisions around nitrogen management, sowing times, and machinery investment. The Grower Group Alliance Project webpage features more information, news, resources, and updates about RiskWise and the 8 Grower Group project partners involved. Simply visit the GGA website at www.gga.org.au. Head to the Activities tab and find RiskWise listed under GGA Projects.